This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. You made it to Friday. It's August 18th, 2018. Your next chance to win $1,000 coming up at 12:24 in Keyword for Cash. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Miriam Sobe in for Chris Kreidel. We have clouds and breaks of sun in the AccuWeather forecast for this afternoon. Humid with a shower or two, even a thunderstorm in places. High near 80 degrees. Becoming partly cloudy tonight, remaining warm and humid, low of 70. And then tomorrow, partly sunny, high around 84 degrees. It'll be cooler at the lakefront in the 70s. It's 74 degrees right now under partly sunny skies at O'Hare, 76 at Midway, 75 at the lakefront.
And the Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village, Bedford Park. After turning in triple-digit gains yesterday, the Dow and the financial markets as a whole taking a bit of a breather today. Let's get the latest on trading from Bloomberg and Jeff Bellinger.
And, Rob, the market is mixed. Dow Jones Industrials doing okay. They are up 53 points, 25,612. But the Nasdaq's down 20. S&P 500 is up just a point. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is positive, but it's up by less than a tenth of a percent. Conference Board saying today the economy should continue to grow for the rest of the year. That's based on the organization's leading economic index, which rose 0.6% last month. The University of Michigan's mid-month reading on consumer sentiment suggests people have turned more bearish over the last month. And Deere & Company posted a smaller-than-expected profit for the latest quarter, but the equipment maker maintains its earnings outlook for the year. Its shares are up nearly 3% this hour. Rob, Miriam?
Thank you so much. And coming up today on the Noon Business Hour, we'll hear from Chief Economist Diane Swonk about trade and economy, what's happening with China talks. Plus, Michael Schultz is a coffee entrepreneur bringing coffee to work so you don't have to leave.
It's an extra-sized entrepreneur Friday today because we're also going to talk to Kimball Musk. He is the brother of Elon Musk. And Kimball Musk, he has some big plans for Chicago, too, but they involve restaurants instead of tunnels.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday. In our next segment, we'll meet the Chicago man behind a coffee startup that's now expanding nationally. Right now, the report on consumer sentiment tops today's data while the U.S. and China are set to hold trade talks next week. We're joined by Diane Swonk, Chief Economist of Grant Thornton out of Chicago. Diane, welcome back to the program.
Always good to be here.
So tell us a little bit about this consumer sentiment. A lot of people might feel confused that just a couple days ago we're talking about retail spending going up, and now all of a sudden people aren't so happy.
Well, what we're seeing is a real divergence between what people are actually seeing in their paychecks and what they feel about the future. So they feel pretty good about what they've got in their paychecks, but expectations about the future have been weighing on consumer sentiment for a while now. And one of the concerns happens to be what's going to happen with tariffs and trade wars, because consumers are apparently fairly aware of the fact that they're the ones that shoulder the burden of any taxes, which are tariffs, related to trade wars.
And as far as these trade talks that are expected to happen next week, will that change anything for people?
Well, gosh, I wish it would. We're certainly encouraged that they're having the talks. That is good news. They haven't had any talks on trade with China since June. What's the not as encouraging news is a couple of things. One is people consistently underestimate how complex trade talks are. They're much harder than things on income tax. Trade laws are much more complex than income tax laws. They also require two countries, their diplomacy, trust. They require a lot of elements to come together. This is much more like, you know, families getting together than just sort of negotiating with someone you know. And I think that's very important because bad blood can play a role in this as well. The good news is they're getting together. The bad news is it's not with the top people. The people that are coming in from China to hold this next round of trade talks are not the top people. And one of the complaints on China's side, and we all know we have a lot of complaints about China, one of the complaints from China is they're getting a lot of mixed messages because because they don't know who has the ultimate authority with the administration to really negotiate it. Is it Secretary Mnuchin? Is it Navarro? Is it Leidinger? There are a lot of people that are negotiating these trade talks. Is it NEC Chair Larry Kudlow? And having that confusion is, you know, adding more chaos to the situation than clarity. That's not something we need at this stage of the game. I don't think we're going to have any meaningful resolution to the trade talks before the midterms. The other sort of wrinkle that's come up more recently is that things that had been going well with Mexico are also not going as well again. And there was hopes that there would be some sort of wrap up on NAFTA with Mexico and upgrade to the NAFTA agreements before the midterms. Those look like they've hit another sort of stumbling block. And remember, NAFTA is not just a bilateral trade agreement with Mexico. It also includes Canada. And there seems to be people forgetting that Canada's in the equation here.
Moving to another data point, the yield curve now at its flattest level since August of 2007, right before the financial crisis. Is this a canary in the coal mine or just a quirk?
Unfortunately, we just don't know the answer to that, but it certainly is one of those things. When the sun is shining on your face, I always warn people that that's the time to remember to listen for storm clouds in the distance. And it could be a storm cloud. We're going into the Jackson Hole, Wyoming meetings with Chairman Powell later this week, and he will affirm what he believes is a strong economy, and I think he's right about that, and affirm his rationale for doing another rate hike in September. That said, he has to react to the sun in his face, not the storm clouds on the horizon. The Fed really is more reactive than anticipatory. They do know about storm clouds on the horizon. There are some people at the Fed that are concerned about the yield curve, and I think you're going to hear more about that later this week, along with why have wages not picked up more. We've got a lot more wages in the economy, which means we can spend more and more households pooling what they can earn, which is great. We welcome that, but the pace of wage growth, of the raises that we're getting, have not been as easy to get up to a level that we would expect, given how low unemployment is.
Well, thank you very much, as always, for the insights, Diane Swack, chief economist at Grant Thornton, based here in Chicago. Coming up, a Chicago company that's taking its coffee to the corporate world.
A wallet full of information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday, and it's time to wake up and smell the coffee and tea. We welcome in Michael Schultz, the co-founder and CEO of Coffee and Tea Bar Holdings, LLC. The company has two entities, Fairgrounds Coffee and Tea, with locations in Chicago, and Infuse, which targets office buildings. Welcome in Michael Schultz, who is the co-founder and CEO of Coffee and Tea Bar Holdings. Michael, welcome to the Noon Business Hour. Let's start off by talking about Infuse, which it seems like it wants to eliminate the coffee run from the office vocabulary.
Yes, Rob and Miriam, thanks for having me in today. You know, Infuse Hospitality was created to design and develop and as well as operate best-in-class, local, authentic coffee bars or food and beverage solutions for shopping malls, offices, large business buildings, residential communities, where there was really not a niche being filled for authentic best-in-class experiences to assist in attracting and retaining millennial talent or millennial tenants or driving a new kind of consumer to their destinations in an effort to activate spaces or increase productivity or just change the culture of an organization. So Infuse Hospitality opened about 12 months ago. We've got 44 locations around the country with about 67 upcoming openings.
Now, you have experience inside the restaurant and hospitality industry. You come from Wolfgang Puck and Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, so you've taken the leap from the entree to coffee. And when analyzing the coffee space, because there are so many concepts out there, so many cafes, so many places where you can get a cup of joe, did it take a long time to arrive at this niche, or was it fairly self-evident?
You know, we saw the trends in specialty coffee and tea following similar trends to craft beer and before that wine, where, you know, Starbucks has done really a phenomenal job of bringing people from the days of Folgers into the world of higher quality coffee. And as palates have changed, you know, they're really looking for these authentic specialty third wave craft roasters. So what we've done is we've taken that and we've made it accessible to all, where you don't have to be an expert in coffee or tea. And we also thought it was strange that in this country, tea played second fiddle to coffee, where in the rest of the world, it is such an important beverage. So in servicing our clients of Infuse Hospitality, which it's really a such a wonderful list, from Sterling Bay to Blackstone Equity Office, JLL, Salesforce, Conagra, Tyson, Chicago Board of Options Exchange, all of these organizations around the country have noticed the impact of it. And we've also used that data to create our retail concept, Fairgrounds Coffee and Tea, which is now operating in 3 markets.
So, Michael, just to go back a little bit about Infuse Hospitality, what exactly does this concept look like? Is this in-house baristas? Are people doing self-serve coffees? How does that work?
It's all that. So as an example, inside Willis Tower, we operate an 11,000-square-foot concept called Tower House, where it is a best-in-class authentic cafe with salad sandwiches, grab-and-go items, amazing coffee and tea, as well as a full-service bar. So the Infuse services from, hey, you know, we have 600 people in an office, you know, we're trying to activate space and create a sense of community. We'd love to have, you know, baristas and an authentic, just like a best-in-class retail experience in our office, to full-blown retail. You know, Infuse offers a solution for these institutional groups, whether it's an office, a large building, a mall, that are all trying to do the same thing. They're trying to figure out, how do we attract and retain millennial talent to our business or guests at our businesses.
Well, thank you very much, Michael Schultz, CEO and co-founder of Coffee and Tea Bar Holdings, LLC. Still ahead in part two of Entrepreneur Friday, a restaurateur opening his second farm-to-table eatery in Chicago.
WBBM News Time, 12:25, business news sponsored by Grandview Homes. Here's Jeff Bellinger.
And Miriam, the Dow Jones Industrial still holding their own, up 49 points to 25,608. NASDAQ down 22 points. S&P 500 is up 1. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is up, but just barely above break-even this hour. Now let's check in with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete.
We've had narrow range in corn, up 2 to down 3 at the moment. We're near those lows. December down 3 at 376 and 3 quarters. Beans have been down 12 to up 2. We're down 11 and a quarter in the July. The November's down 12 and a half. And wheat for September up 14 at 556 and a half, a couple off their high. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
And thank you, Pete. One more check of the Dow, up 49 points this hour. With business at 25 and 55 from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Jeff Bellinger, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Miriam Sobe, in for Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are mixed at this hour. We'll see what's moving Wall Street.
In Entrepreneur Friday, the Chicago area will be getting a second restaurant from businessman and philanthropist Kimball Musk.
Amazon is looking to expand its empire into the movie theater business.
Chicago police are questioning a boy believed to be as young as 11 years old about a shooting last night that left a teenager dead, another seriously wounded.
President Trump expects to quickly revoke the security clearance of a Justice Department official whose wife worked for the firm that produced a report on Trump ties to Russia.
WBBM Business, the Dow is up 37 points, NASDAQ down 26, S&P up a fraction.
AccuWeather says clouds and breaks of sun this afternoon, humid with a shower or two, even a thunderstorm in places, and a high near 80. Right now it is 74 degrees in Chicago under partly sunny skies, and the Noon Business Hour continues, presented by the Village of Bedford Park.
Markets are fairly quiet on this final day of the trading week. We are joined by Mike Larson, senior analyst, WeissRatings.com out of Jupiter, Florida. Mike, welcome back to the program. Let's talk some of these stocks that are going up today, including Apple.
Sure. We have kind of a quiet end of the week after a big rally yesterday, especially driven by what was going on with Walmart's earnings. Apple's making a new high, but, you know, it's interesting when you look at some of the other stocks out there in the market, many of the FANG names, the Facebooks, Netflix, and so on, they've actually been weakening recently, and the money's been rotating into what I call safe money sectors. Up until a few months ago, it was tech and more tech that was leading the market. But now you're seeing consumer staples, REITs, utilities, and those kinds of names that pay higher yields, that have less volatility, and that do better in weak economic times start to outperform. And that's kind of an interesting development because I think it speaks to a rotation, again, of money out of these sort of overinflated, overowned sectors and into sectors that have a little bit more safety, a little bit more yield, and a little more stability, which I think going forward is a good thing to do.
Now, trade talks with China next week, will that have any effect on how the market plays out?
Well, certainly one of the components driving yesterday's market gains was some talk about maybe a low-level delegation of China working with our side to maybe kind of try and hammer out some kind of deal. But it doesn't seem like a major step forward to me. Also, we have the Fed having its annual gathering out in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, to talk about policy. And it'd be interesting to see if the chairman of the Fed later in the week, next week, says anything that makes the market think, maybe they won't be as aggressive with interest rate hikes. So those are a few of the drivers, trade and interest rate policy, that I think are going to move us forward from here. We've been stuck in a range for a few weeks, and if we're going to break out, we're going to need to get good news on that front if we're going to break out to the upside. Or if we get the kind of the wrong news and some stricter interest rate policy and problems with China, then we're likely to break down from here.
And moving from China to Turkey, what's the risk to the U.S. economy if the economic crisis there continues to spread, if it draws in, let's say, the rest of Europe or draws in parts of Asia? What happens to the United States in the middle of all this?
Well, I think what's happening in Turkey is part of a broader trend towards somewhat tighter money and somewhat higher interest rates. I mean, we've had this multi-year period where very much easy money from the U.S. Federal Reserve and other central banks overseas helped create quite a run-up in asset values. And now you're seeing the Fed try and reverse some of that. You're seeing some of these foreign central banks step back. So these countries that borrowed a lot of money in U.S. dollars, namely Turkey, but there's others like South Africa out there, they're starting to run into some trouble because the dollar value is going up, which makes it harder to pay those debts that you took out back. I think, if it were just Turkey, that'd be one thing. But again, there's other countries that did this as well. So it's one of the reasons I've gotten a lot more conservative in terms of my recommendations this year. I've been recommending people hold much higher levels of cash and do what the market's doing, and that's shift out of some of the riskier sectors and into some of these safer, higher-yielding ones.
The question that a lot of analysts and a lot of economists have been grappling with over the past couple of months is how much room does the economy have left to run? That some think that this growth that's from the end of the Great Recession 9 years ago can continue into the near future. Others are starting to see some alarm bells. What is your crystal ball showing you?
Sure. I think that we are, in fact, in the very late innings of this thing, maybe even the ninth inning of this run. So, again, when I look at some of the turmoil we've seen, the volatility in the market since the February timeframe, when I look at the fact that the yield curve has been flattening to levels we haven't seen since just before the last market peak, there's a lot of, and again, when I see that rotation out of these riskier sectors and into these safer sectors, I think that people are starting to realize this thing can't go on forever. So I think that, again, personally, you've got to be more defensive now. You've got to focus more on yield and stability, and you got to carry a higher level of cash because, the bull market run that's been pretty uninterrupted from 2009 through the beginning of this year looks like it's starting to sputter now.
We talked a little bit, you talked about moving people into cash. Is there any particular area of the market that, or even like, the greater economy as a whole, that is piquing your interest, that's jumping out at you as something that is really worth talking about?
Well, again, I think it's some of those value stocks, those they may seem stodgy, things like utilities, things like consumer staples, food and beverage type names. People have been selling those stocks for so long because they weren't as sexy and they weren't as performing as well as tech and some of these other parts of the economy and parts of the market. But they are starting to lead now in the last 1, 3, and 6 month period. And I think that's telling us something. I think that if you're looking at as a conservative investor for yield, for safety, and for a little bit of stability, those are the kinds of names that I think make a whole lot of sense at this stage in the economic cycle.
In the tech sector, there's been a great deal of debate about content management on Facebook and Twitter, certain accounts being kicked off the site, and a lot of debate about the ethics of that. Does that really trickle down into the business, or is that an entirely separate debate?
Well, I think that, you know, when it's just one company within the tech sector that's having problems over one issue, then it doesn't necessarily cause problems for the overall sector. But you've got a lot of this getting more broad, more widespread, and affecting more than just one company. I mean, it's not just Facebook. There's questions about Google. There's questions about some of these other, you know, data management firms, how your data is getting used and so on. So I think that definitely plays a role in some of the recent stumbles for the sector. I mean, if they're, you know, if they're facing more government scrutiny, you never know what's going to happen once the government gets involved in your business. So yeah, I do think that that's an issue for some of these companies, and I think that's why money is looking for other homes that don't have that risk. And again, that's some of those sectors that I mentioned earlier.
Well, thank you very much for the insights. Mike Larson, senior analyst at WeissRatings.com, based in Jupiter, Florida. Coming up at Entrepreneur Friday, a famous name plots his next move in Chicago.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday. Construction has started on the next-door American Eatery in Vernon Hills with plans for an opening early next year. Let's talk to the restaurateur behind the project. We welcome in Kimball Musk, real food entrepreneur and co-founder of the Kitchen Restaurant Group based in Boulder, Colorado. Kimball, welcome to WBBM. We should note, though, that you are the second Musk with big designs, a big project for Chicago. You have this restaurant planned for Vernon Hills. And, of course, your brother Elon Musk wants to build a super train from downtown to O'Hare. What is it about the Chicago area that is attracting you to Vernon Hills?
Hey, thank you for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it. We're really excited to bring Next Door American Eatery to Chicago. It's our first restaurant will be in Vernon Hills. A fun, hip, real food restaurant. Kind of the restaurants you'll see in River North or Wicker Park, but we're going to bring it out to the suburbs. We already have the kitchen in downtown, which has been an amazingly wonderful restaurant for us, and Chicago has been so supportive. But I think that, I don't know, the secret to Chicago, I guess, is just Chicago. It's just a wonderful community of people. It's one of the greatest cities in the world. And, you know, for us, you know, working with Chicago, whether it's restaurants, by the way, we also work, I work in schools across Chicago in partnership with Mayor Emanuel, and we build our learning gardens through our nonprofit. We're in 170 schools in Chicago, and work with over 100,000 kids in Chicago every school day. So Chicago's got a special place in our heart. I don't know how else to say it. It's just we've fallen in love with that city.
And what have you learned about the restaurant business along the way, and how are you going to apply some of these lessons to the Next Door American Eatery?
Well, we really have learned a lot from Chicago. I think Chicago's one of the top restaurant cities in the world, best food culture, I think, in the country. And we've learned so much just by being in the city for 4 years at the kitchen and learning how to deliver the kind of delicious products that are, you know, as good or better than our competitors, which in that city, that's a high bar. And so now what we're ready to do is we're with the success of downtown at the kitchen, we want to expand into the suburbs of Chicago and bring the same fun, hip vibe you get downtown and bring it into the suburbs.
Kimball, now I noticed a lot of your focus is on sustainability and farm to table. What's inspired you to take that route?
You know, for us, it's really about trusting your food. Real food is trusting the food to nourish your body, trusting the food to nourish the farmer, and trusting the food to nourish the planet. And, you know, if you look at work with local farmers, you're just going to have that trust. The food tastes so much better if you don't have to ship it 1,000 miles, and you trust the food. So it's a double win for us. To us, it's just good business to work with local farmers, and it's really a wonderful way to connect to the community as well.
And so it's not about the price tag. A lot of people are hesitant, for example, to get into organics or local farmers because it could be more costly.
Well, I mean, that's actually what's so wonderful about Next Door. It's so much more affordable than other typical farm-to-table restaurants. The average menu item is $10. The average check might be $15 or $16. It's designed for everyday eating. You can trust your food, you can eat locally, you can eat organically, but it's at a price point that people can afford.
All right. Well, thank you so much. That's Kimball Musk, real food entrepreneur and co-founder of the Kitchen Restaurant Group based in Boulder, Colorado. Still to come, Amazon sets its sights on yet another industry.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Amazon is among the companies looking to buy the Landmark movie chain, which has locations on Chicago's North Side and in Highland Park. We're joined by Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Vertere Group out of Chicago. Tim, welcome to the program. And what is Amazon not capable of at this point?
Hi, Miriam. Well, it's a good question, right? It seems like there's no physical point of presence that Amazon doesn't seem to be considering in an effort to extend its prowess in all things e-commerce. And I think it's also very interesting in that, you know, a lot of people look at it as a juggernaut in all things electronic commerce. But the reality is that consumers don't sort of look at things like movies or books or clothing or all kind of food for that matter as simply an online or an offline purchase. It's actually a combination of the two. You've got a company in Amazon that is just so good at the digital format, the logistics of such. It's just a natural lever for them to get into judicious points of presence physically. And I think the movie theater realm is no different given their prowess in television and video.
Would this be an actual, if they did go through with a purchase of the Landmark movie chain, an actual brick and mortar place where they would put all of their media on, or are they just looking to purchase it and then get rid of it like they've done with some other companies?
Yeah, I think this is an integration of a channel, right, in that they spent so much money. And Netflix, by the way, is also rumored to be circling around the Landmark chain as well. I think it's a way to encourage folks to enjoy movies and maybe even television, quote unquote, fare in maybe more communal settings, perhaps in a more refined environment than just simply streaming it on one's television set. And also, too, Landmark is known more for, shall we say, artsy or more limited appeal movies for older audiences or more, you know, documentaries, those kinds of things, which is the antithesis of sort of the big mega blockbuster Marvel, you know, comic book hero type of experience. And maybe that's where Amazon would like to differentiate a little bit, not only to help substantiate their current streaming offerings, but also maybe to give people another option as well.
Very quickly, Amazon being a movie studio, owning a movie theater, does that run into any possible legal hurdles? Because, I mean, there was a court case about this in the 50s that that kind of got the studios kicked out of the movie theater owning business.
Rob, you paid attention in law school. Fantastic. Yes, it's about a 7-year-old proclamation that essentially unbundled at the time Paramount Pictures from owning movie theaters. And there has been recent discussion in the last couple of weeks of revisiting that case in light of today's ever-changing media landscape. So this could be an open door for an Amazon or a Netflix, for that matter, to get into the movie theater business.
Yeah, the Marquette Media Law class continuing to pay off. Thank you very much. Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Verterra Group based in Chicago. Thanks for joining us today. You'll find past programs and later today a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the all-new Radio.com app. Business coming up next.
WBBM News Time, 12:55 business news from Bloomberg. Here's Jeff Bellinger.
And Miriam, a familiar story. Stocks are mixed. The Dow Jones Industrials up 48 points, 25,606. The Nasdaq's down 19. The S&P 500 not doing a lot today. It's up 2 points. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is unchanged at the moment. Walmart has applied for a pair of patents that detail a virtual showroom and a new type of fulfillment system. The filings with the Patent and Trademark Office suggest the giant retailer wants to find out whether we take to shopping from home via virtual reality connected to a three-dimensional cyber store through VR headsets and sensor-packed gloves. Bloomberg reports Tyson Foods has agreed to buy the chicken nugget maker Keystone Foods from its Brazilian parent company. A source puts the value of the deal at $2.5 billion. Nordstrom shares are rallying today. The department store chain's quarterly results top Wall Street forecast. Nordstrom's up 12%. With business at 25 and 55 from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Jeff Bellinger, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.